Oh God, do you know what? I have about 4 cups before 10 o'clock. No, 2 coffees, 2 teas before 10, I think.
Okay, that seems all right.
Do you think? And
Yeah.
then I try and stop by about 4 o'clock.
So you don't go mad before you go to bed, you mean?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, then I switch to wine.
Hello, and welcome to another Word Monkeys podcast. My name's Matt Brown, I write children's books, and that voice you heard at the beginning of the podcast was none other than Lisa Thompson, who wanted to explain to me her preferred drinking arrangements during her working day. Hope you're okay. It's currently the week beginning the 15th of June, 2020. I am currently in England, in the United Kingdom, and we are still in lockdown, and I don't know what week this is of lockdown. It's something approaching the 12th week, I think. Just sort of lost track of the weeks and the months. And now, I now think of the lockdown in terms of units of measurements, like summer holidays. So we're currently 2 summer holidays into the lockdown. In case you're interested in any of my books for lockdown, I've been reading a chapter a day on my Facebook page, so you can go and see that if you fancy. facebook.com/Matt Brown Writer. And if you've missed any chapters, they're all archived on there as well, which is facebook.com/Matt Brown Writer/live. During lockdown, I've been chatting to authors that I really like and I've been wanting to chat to for ages. And Lisa Thompson is no exception to that. I think Lisa's a brilliant writer and also is a really funny person as well. And it was lovely to chat to her. Here's some information about Lisa in case you don't know anything about her. This is taken from her website, lisathompsonauthor.com. She says that she was born in Essex. She has written 3 novels and 1 novella. The 3 novels are The Goldfish Boy, The Light Jar, and The Day I Was Erased. And the novella is called Owen and the Soldier. I'll talk a bit about Owen and the Soldier with Lisa for reasons that will become apparent if you keep listening. Some fascinating facts about Lisa, according to her website, was that she wrote her first book when she was 9. The very first book she remembers reading was Watership Down by Richard Adams. And she says, I used to work behind the scenes making radio programmes for the BBC. I love radio, and if you're in my company for long enough, I'll go on and on about how great it is. It took about 5 minutes into the conversation before she started banging on about radio. Which is not a problem, because I love radio as well. So we had a chat about that. I really hope you enjoy the chat I had with Lisa. Just for transparency purposes, I just want to let you know that we chatted on April the 23rd. So that was about a month into lockdown in the UK and about 2 months ago from where I am now. It's quite fun listening back when I was editing this to hear what was occupying thought space a month into lockdown. Anyway, enjoy the chat. I'll see you on the other side.
How are you? How's life in lockdown?
It is okay. I think for the sort of first time since it started this week, the novelty has slightly dimmed.
Yes. Same for me, actually. Exactly the same. I'm researching my family tree at the moment, rather than writing a book.
I've decided
I've spent hours researching my old relatives. And just yesterday I ordered something. The Imperial War Museum have war diaries.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, I'll have to go to Kew and have a look, you know, and get an appointment. And literally within seconds, I'd had all these documents I wanted emailed on PDF files.
Amazing, isn't it?
For £3.50.
Yeah.
I'm reading the handwriting of the people who are in the trenches, and I just, God, this is just,
yeah,
so it's brilliant as well, isn't it?
It's it is good. Two, I did a couple of years ago, the BBC let me make a programme about a relative of mine who was one of the first conscientious objectors, because it was the 100th year of it.
Oh, gosh. Oh, did you look into it then?
So, yeah, I looked into his story particularly. It felt like there was there would be a lot of similarities for a lot of people. But the Imperial War Museum were really helpful with their sort of archive and their information. The thing I was struck by was how difficult it is to find out bits of information about people past a certain date, if you know what I mean. And so it was very difficult. I probably found about four or five things with his signature on. And that they all felt like real sort of treasures.
Yes, yeah. Because my mum's dad was a conscientious objector as well. Did he have a role at all? Because I think
he did.
My father was fire service or fire.
Yeah, my great uncle went to France and was an ambulance, a stretcher bearer on the sort of front line there. Right. Because I think that's there were lots of stories like that where you sort of think the tale that was told was that they were cowards and they weren't, you know, and actually some of them just did exactly, you know what I mean, still saw service, but still saw action, but in a way that sort of soothed their conscience, I suppose.
Yeah, I didn't realise actually, because I asked my mum a lot about it, whether he spoke about it or whether he had... But she doesn't remember any.
Yeah, was he a Quaker? My great uncle was a Quaker.
No, I think he's he's the only person in my family that I know of, but no, it wasn't a Quaker.
Yeah, and they used to.
It's kind of go on. Sorry.
Isn't it the little things like the government used to send women round, looking and shaming men of a certain age who were. Still in the in the town, they hadn't been sent to the front, right. And they would sort of like just publicly shame people at going about their day to day business.
Gosh,
I know, it's mad, isn't it? But I suppose that's a bit like Twitter, isn't it?
Yeah, we just do it, but behind closed doors now. Yeah.
That's great. And have you found out any more details about any of your relatives then?
I get a little bit obsessed with how people died. If you find that they died quite young or something, then I go, I'm just going to order that death certificate.
Just see what happened.
Awful, isn't it?
I know.
But I did, actually, funny enough, in The Goldfish Boy, there's a graveyard. One of the characters goes to the graveyard. And I remember as a child going to my, it would have been my nan's husband and her parents in London, going to the graveyard every couple of months, and it'd be surrounded by these big Victorian mausoleums, and it had a really big impact on me actually.
Yeah.
And then, I used that in the book, and also I used one of my ancestors' names on a gravestone and like copied it what they've done. So
that's cool.
Yeah, just to kind of keep them around somewhere. Yeah.
I was most recently in a graveyard a couple of months ago. My wife went to put some flowers on the grave of her grandparents, who live quite a long way away. And I just was looking around, and you do on gravestones, they're really interesting, aren't they? There was one particularly where there was a woman who was, it was like beloved sister, mother and grandmother. And then you looked at her age and she was about 35 when she died. She was really young. You think, wow, that's interesting, isn't it? The stories in those sort of numbers and gravestones is really interesting.
I know, learn so much.
I know, you do, don't you? There's a guy in our village, we live in quite a small village, and there's a guy who every year keeps researching people who died in the wars from our village.
Yeah.
And he always includes the house numbers that they lived at, or the houses. And I find that detail, that extra detail, is like really powerful. because you can place them in a space and they become much more sort of flesh and blood than normal. Yeah.
Than just a name and number. Yeah. And also I'm finding, probably like the guy in your village, it's people of a certain age who are researching their trees because they're retirement. It's just, and it's perfect for lockdown, actually. To something to do from your, if you are bored, if you're not working.
Do I take it to mean then that you haven't been writing very much during the lockdown?
Well, I have. I really struggled to start with. I think everybody did, didn't I?
And why so is I'm that, do you think?
I think I was obsessed with watching the news. Mm. So I was checking the news constantly. Now I kind of just watch the news briefing. Does that, and look at the charts.
Yeah.
Get the latest figures. And then I normally turn it off when the journalists start asking questions. Mm. But I handed in my first draft of a book early last week.
Oh, well done.
I've got to the point, I don't know if you do, I always get to a point where you can't really see the wood for the trees and you think, and also the point where you think this is all rubbish. You need somebody to look at it. Yeah. So waiting for that to come back. I'm just about to start another book with Barrington Stoke.
Oh, great.
So I just have to go ahead with them. So this is the test now. So now I've got to actually sit and start writing, which I feel like I've had a week off in a way.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't really. I've been doing other
researching,
yeah. Things I'm never going to use. Yeah. The trouble with research, isn't it? I never really have had to do much research with my books. But I've heard of people that say they can just get obsessed with the research.
Yeah. Yeah, that's I know what you mean. I think I probably did do that a lot when I was trying to write. But I think maybe it feels a bit to me now like, I don't know if you were like this, but whenever there were exams looming, I would spend probably a good week writing up my exam revision timetable. In really like nice colours and...
It's like notes and things, isn't it, for us?
It feels a bit like some of that is just avoidance of the actual act of writing.
Definitely, yes. I was reading, you have a radio background just like me, don't you?
Yes, I do. What's your radio background?
I used to work for Radio 2.
Did you?
Yes.
So did I.
Did you?
Well, as a freelancer, I made some programmes for Radio 2.
Right, okay.
What did you do?
So I was there I was in Terry Wogan's day. I worked on Terry Wogan's show for
a while.
Brilliant. Friday night is music night.
Yeah.
Classical concerts, proms in the park. And then left to have children, and then freelance for radio for a production company that make sort of documentaries and plays for Radio 4.
Uh-huh.
Did quite a bit for Radio 4 as well.
Oh, that's cool.
Good days, and love. I'm a big fan of the radio still.
Yeah.
Me
too.
Things like podcasts didn't exist when I was in radio.
So no, exactly. I know. No. It's funny, isn't it? Because some podcasts are really brilliant. And some podcasts are not.
Exactly. Yeah. I tend to go with recommendations. Mm. And then also there's almost, because I do follow podcasts, but then you can feel overwhelmed. You've got so much to listen to.
Yeah.
And then you suddenly, oh gosh, I've got all these programs downloaded. And but there's lots I was listening to Fern Cotton's.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Ones she does, ones about being happy.
Oh, that's good.
And there's on Radio 4 at the moment, they're doing, is it The World in 100 Objects?
Oh, right, yeah, I've heard of
that. Yeah, I think it's about 15 minutes long, and they're experts. So yeah, things like that, things I can sort of dip into, really.
Yeah, that's good. Now, I want to talk to you about your books.
Yeah, okay.
So first of all, are you a fan of black and white films?
I love films in general.
Yeah. I was just thinking about when I was reading the synopsis for your book, which is hang on a sec. The Day I Was Erased.
Yes.
Which reminded me a little bit of It's a Wonderful Life.
Completely. It's a complete rip-off of It's a Wonderful Life.
Brilliant.
Yes, it's one of my all-time favourite films. And when I was, before I wrote that book, that was, I was in the lovely position of trying to think of an idea, got to think of an idea.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about my films I loved, and I thought so many people have done sort of different takes on time travelling and kind of swapping bodies and all, you know, I couldn't think of any. And I thought, oh, I don't know if anyone's done anything on as if I hadn't existed. Yeah. Somebody might. So, yes, that was complete influence of the whole book.
And so you needed an idea. You remembered that film and you thought, okay, that feels like that's a good sort of world to explore.
Yeah, and I thought readers probably might not have come across. My kids knew the film, but not many, I don't think, do. When I ask, when I visit schools, there's like two hands go up in the audience. And so the whole concept of being able to see the people around you, but nobody knows who you are.
Yeah.
And undoing all the good things you've done. I just think that's obviously the magical part of the film, isn't it? When Jewel runs through the town and everything's changed.
Yeah.
And I loved writing that from a child's perspective. So he would remember, like, he used to swing on the garden gate, and when he goes home, the first thing and it broke.
Mm.
And when he goes back home, when he's been erased, the gate's back.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing. He's like, I don't remember that getting mended. And that was just... It was just a joy writing those scenes. I still watch that film every Christmas
time. It's brilliant, isn't it? Love it. But I was also thinking of The Goldfish Boy as well, and that feels, that's got a sort of Rear Window-y slight aspect to it. About a boy who observes the world from his bedroom window.
I didn't steal that idea. But it kind of fit. Then I realised, maybe subconsciously I did. Yeah. So that kind of came from... my sister, when we were little, we had polystyrene tile, or she had in her bedroom, a polystyrene tiled ceiling.
Uh-huh.
She used to stand on her bed and jump and poke her finger into the ceiling and make all these indentations. And then at night time, she used to go to bed and say, I can see faces in the ceiling, and get really, really worried about it. And then, so then I started thinking about, that always stayed in my mind. And then, you know, when you kind of see something in a piece of wood or... you know, around the room. So I just thought of a person who stays in the room and they see a piece of wallpaper that looks like a lion.
Mm.
And then I thought, well, why can he be in his room? And I went through lots of different scenarios. Maybe he's had a car accident and he's in, you know, he can't move because his back's hurt. And then I just happened to see a documentary with John Richardson on Channel 4 called A Little Bit OCD. And I watched it kind of with the opinion that, like, lots of people have that OCD just means you're a bit tidy and you wash your hands more. And then I watched this documentary and realised it's nothing like that for a lot of people. Mm. And I thought that's where my character is. That's why he doesn't want to leave his bedroom. So, and then I kind of realised, no, then I kind of just had him in his bedroom and nothing happened. And I was lucky in that I had an agent at the time, and she said, I think something needs to happen. Maybe something he sees on the street, and then the whole mystery element to it. So then it became a bit Rear Window-ish.
Yeah, it's good though. It's a great idea.
Oh, thank you. I need to rewatch the film actually.
Yeah.
The Jimmy Stewart film, because it is a classic idea. It's a bit like the girl on the train, isn't it? Just being observing things from a distance.
I think that's a great idea, isn't it? Because it feels like something that everybody does. And as you sort of daydream about, oh my God, what if I saw something I shouldn't see?
Yeah, exactly.
I've recently just finished reading Owen and the Soldier.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, in fact, I've finished reading it maybe last night or the night before last. And I sort of found out about it because we are nominated in the same category in awards together, aren't we?
Oh. Yes. What one was that? It's not happening now.
Yeah, what one's that? It's like, I know exactly when it's happening. But Lisa Thompson, have I been nominated for another award? I'll just put it over here in my enormous awards room. It is still happening, but not. It's been postponed.
Oh, yes. I know the one. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's a lovely award.
Lovely. Very exciting. Have you been nominated before for it?
I had. I've never won. What? Is this the Federation of Children's Book
Yeah,
Group?
That's right. Yeah. Where kids vote for it.
I've been lucky enough to be nominated the last 2 years running, so perfected the losing phase. But the first year, it's a brilliant event, and you're with children and teachers and librarians. So you're put with other kids and you're sitting with them having dinner and they're chatting and doing their colouring.
That sounds good.
Yeah, it's really good. Really,
so you can't
really
get too hammered.
No. No, I wouldn't recommend that, no.
But I was reading, because we're nominated in the same category.
Yes, because I think they've added a category in, haven't they?
Yeah, they? Just for us?
Yes. Just for us, yes.
And
Younger readers,
it's called, yeah. But the nice that I didn't know anything about it until a few months ago. But I think the nice thing is that this is, you get nominated because your book has been voted the best by the kids who've read it in their book groups, haven't you?
Yeah, and I think it's the only one from, I think there's other ones that kids obviously vote in, but somebody decides the shortlist. But yeah, this is from day one.
Yeah.
These books are picked by the children, which is, isn't that wonderful?
Amazing, isn't it? Yeah, really cool.
Yeah, really good.
So I thought, I'll read Owen and the Soldier and see what the competition's like. And I thought it was brilliant. I loved it. And I thought, damn her, because she's made me cry at the end of the book.
Excellent.
I just didn't see that coming at all. So I thought it was really good.
Oh, thank you. See, more history seems to creep into my books with memorials.
Thing that is the tear-jerkery bit of that is, for me anyway, maybe it's be different for different people who read it, but it's the relationship between a father and a son. That's the thing that sort of caught in my throat.
Right, of course, yeah, it would. That's interesting, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I did, and also with Owen, I wanted to kind of wave a flag for kids that are quiet, that don't stand up in class, and I've got, my two are quite different, one who would stand up and one who wouldn't, and I just feel for them, because there seems a lot, and I would have been the one who wouldn't want to. I'm fine now, but as a child, just even when we used to take turns in reading a passage from some books, I just think, please don't hit me. And so I really wanted him to not want to do those kind of things. Yeah. And then you've got the dreaded teacher who's kind of like, come on.
No, I thought it was brilliant. I thought, oh God, she's going to win, isn't she? She's gonna scoop up the award. No one's going to vote for a funny book when there's a book that can make them cry.
Well, that's the thing with funny books, isn't it? Which I think is really frustrating, that funny books miss out on a lot of awards, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
And I think that's really, because it's hard to make people laugh. It's probably easier to make them cry than it is to make people laugh.
That's what I thought as I was reading it. I thought, this is much easier to do. And there we have it. Another Word Monkeys sails into the distance. Bon voyage. I hope you enjoyed the chat with Lisa. She's a brilliant person to spend time with. I wholeheartedly recommend it. If you want to find out more about what Lisa's up to, then just go to lisathompsonauthor.com. That's her website. And the award that we were talking about, that we're both nominated for, is the Federation of Children's Book Groups Award. And you can still vote. You've got until September the 11th, 2020, to vote. And Lisa's book is excellent, and you could vote for her. Or the other brilliant book is called The Maker of Monsters by Lorraine Gregory. You could vote for that if you wanted to. Or you could vote for my book as well, Mutant Zombies Curse My School Trip. Because, you know, I wrote it and it's quite good. Vote if you want to. Check out the link in the description. Okay, stay safe. Enjoy the rest of lockdown. Bye.